5th, 2019, Sussex County Council meeting. First thing is the approval of the agenda. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, members of council. I do have one recommended change today under executive session land acquisition. We can strike executive session and possible action on executive session items.
Okay. Entertain a motion to approve the amended agenda. Motion, Mr. Wilson.
Second.
Second, Mr. Burton. Any questions? We'll take the vote. Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
Yes, motion carried. We had the minutes of January 29th. Any questions, corrections, additions? Hearing none, no stand approved. Correspondence? Mr. Rutt?
There is no correspondence.
Any correspondence from council? Any correspondence from council?
Mr. Vincent, I do have one correspondence that you may find interesting. From Mr. Cole, former county councilman. Mr. Cole, he asked to have this read into the record today. Dear Todd, my family and I would sincerely like to thank you, the staff, and of course council for the retirement party that the county hosted. I'm very appreciative for all the sponsors that financially supported the event. The highlight was seeing so many people I'd worked with over the years. It made for a wonderful evening, seeing some old faces and friends. As I've said many times, Sussex County Council is the best political position an elected official could have. It is like being on the front lines fighting for quality of life issues that face Sussex County. Good luck to the new and old members of the council. Signed, George Cole.
Wow.
He was talking about me, said old members.
Yeah, old members. Yeah. Old members, Sam, old members. Hey, okay, public comments, Mr. Guy, if you bring that forward, please. As Mr. Guy is bringing it forward, just to reiterate, some people, I guess, aren't aware of this, of our rules of procedure. The public's allowed to come forward and make their comments on county business. Your comments limited to 3 minutes. There's a timer up here. You'll see a green light, a yellow light, and a red light. The red light comes on, your 3 minutes is up. And the council members will not respond to any of your comments. First thing, Mr. Rieger.
Good morning. Paul Rieger, 18171 Deer Forest Road, Georgetown. With going forward and coming up with the two new council members, and with different ways that ordinances are put in and done and introduced, there's two things that I would like for the county council to do. The first one is I brought up the fact for public stables. It's a special use exception in general residential under 5 acres. It is not even listed in AR under a special use exception at all, which does not make no sense. You would think that you would want to have, and under AR, the public stables also. It's either correct in NGR and should be in AR, or it should not be in GR and it should not be in AR. That's your discussion. But either way, it should be fixed and rectified for it to make sense. But the catch is with the public stable, when it comes in between private stable and public stable, is you can have a person out there with 4.5 acres or something, have one or two horses, has a friend and they want to board a friend's horse there and put compensation on it for to feed the horse and maintain the horse or however it works. Technically, I believe in AR in Sussex County, if you own 4.5 up to 5 acres of land, you can't even board a horse if you're taking any sort of a payment for the board for that horse, which doesn't make no sense. And with it not being listed under special use exception under AR, I believe you don't leave an avenue for it to be done. The second thing that comes in on a similar set of preferences is with public stables also. In private stables, it's a 50-foot setback. In public stables, it takes it all the way out for the 200-foot setbacks. As seen with SDR, 9.7 acres, 9.8 acres, they couldn't even put a public stable there without coming in for a variance, which did not make no sense. But yet, if you look at the public feedlot and private feedlot, the public feedlot, to have as many other livestock on your property, is only a 100-foot setback. It seems to be a total disparity in it. Either make the private feedlots out to 200 to match the horses, or pull the horses into 100, which should be done. The horses, the exception, should come back to 100, because somebody has a family of five, you want to have a couple horses and three minis, you can't even do it technically under 5 acres, because you don't have the avenue for the public stable. And even on different over 5 acres, over the 5 acre farm, if you don't have the 400 feet, you can't put a barn or stable that will hold that, the five horses on there, unless you have the setbacks, which seems to be a little bit questionable. Second, the third thing last night, which comes in back to Board of Adjustment again, is subpoena in a builder, or to come in because of variance. That should be looked into the council, whether it's going to be standing rule or, and I'm out of time.
Thank you, sir. Dan Kramer.
My name is Dan Kramer. You know, I've finally figured out, we've been raising Cana by Board of Adjustment and getting these codes fixed, and nothing has occurred. Well, why not? Well, I can tell you why not. Because you're acting just like a bunch of Democrats. Pelosi and Schumer, you've had plenty of time to get this stuff up on your agendas. Had 3 weeks ago, you had a morning session that you could have discussed this stuff and figured out what needs to be changed. And yet, oh, we're not going to do that, because guess what? Kramer and Rigger wanted change and brought up the speed. Well, guess what? The shoe fits, Schumer and Pelosi. Boy, you guys sure look like them too.
Next, we got a presentation by Bill Andrew, President and CEO of Darlington Co-op. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. President and Councilman. Ladies, gentlemen, thank you for having me today. I'm here to present a capital credit check to the county, which we are the only electric company in the state of Delaware that gives money back to their members, but that's not why I'm here today. I know we have a couple new council people on the council, and my congratulations to you.
Thank you.
But I want you to know a little bit about Delaware Electric Cooperative. I'm sure you already do. But we serve over 73% of our membership, over 72,500 members are served in Sussex County alone by Delaware Electric Cooperative. And we have the lowest rates in the region, so therefore we're one of the largest economic development drivers for the county. And I will tell you that Sussex County, Delaware, is a huge economic engine for the state of Delaware, if not for the East Coast. I talk to a lot of people and they ask me about strategy and how do we deal with strategy and infrastructure. Well, this year we're going to spend more than $30 million on infrastructure in Kent and Sussex County, the majority of that being in Sussex County, in order to meet the needs of our members as we move forward. And we're going to have to continue to do that, because this year, on our books at this point in time, we have 5,900 approved lots for building on, and that's a good thing. Last year at this time, we had 4,000 lots. So we're seeing a significant increase, and I know that you're spending a lot of time in planning to make it happen. It's only going to increase the needs of the county as we move forward, because everybody wants to come to Sussex County to live where I live, to go to school where my kids go to school and my grandchildren go to school. And it's a tremendous place to be, and it's going to continue to do that into the future. I want to thank you and make sure that you know that, and I handed out a couple of my business cards. I know that many of the folks here have my cell number. I'm a cell number person. And anytime we can be of further help to Sussex County, not only in the planning, future scenarios, keeping the lights on, or making sure that this remains a great place to live, call me. I will answer. And with that, I would like, Mr. President, or whomever would like to come, I have a check for you for a capital credit of $17,249.55.
You forgot to start at my place.
Now, I assume when you say a check for you, that means it's a check for the county.
For the county.
Okay, check.
For the county, sir.
Bill, thank you very much, sir. I appreciate all you do.
Seriously.
Thank you. It's a pleasure working with you.
Tell you what, we got a nice capital credit check. Thank you. Did? Chicken house. Nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
See, I know what to do, is check. Take away the finance records. Now, Mr. Lawson, I see we're about 2 minutes from 10:15. We should have a public hearing. Can we do the Caroling on the Circle food drive, and then that those can go back to school if they choose to or whatever, and then we'll move on to the public hearing?
Sure, yeah, let's do that. So today we're going to recognize the Caroling on the Circle food drive efforts that took place last year in relationship to the county's annual Caroling on the Circle event and our packing of the pod. We are joined today by several representatives for those folks that in the community that helped us raise food. We do have a plaque, and we're going to have our picture taken with each one of the groups that are represented today. Mr. President, you make your way down. We're going to start at the bottom of the list and work up, and hold till the end the number one food drive recipient this year. So first to be recognized is Mr. Bill Chandler. Is Mr. Chandler here? Yep, there he is, hiding back there. Mr. Chandler raised $200, which brought in 550 food items.
Wow. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next recipient also raised $200 is Flex World Fitness. $200 was able to gain 550 food items. Is Heidi here?
She is.
Okay.
I'm going to give her this all the exercise program.
She'll kill you.
Thank you very much. I know that. I'm referring to me. Everybody else good. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Next on the list is the Sussex County Association of Realtors, represented by Patricia Anderson. They raised $250, which brought in 688 food items.
Hey, young lady, how are you today? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next is Sussex Central High School. Sussex Central High School raised 1,183 food items. They're represented by Kristen Abels and the Student Council representatives.
Yeah, come on, somebody over here. Just kind of spread around. There you go. Get your photo up. There you go. Good. Thank you all very much.
We take one more.
Oh, you sure can? Yes, I hear you. No, you're good. No, you're good.
It's got to be different.
I know.
Good. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate all you do. Thank you.
Next on the list is Colonial East LP, represented by Mr. Steve Class. Donated $500, which brought in 1,375 food items.
See, we shake.
Oh, yeah.
Good, thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you.
Next is the Georgetown Elementary School, represented by Mr. Ivan Neal, assistant principal, and students. The elementary school was able to raise 1,877 food items.
Come on this side. Kind of spread here on both sides. Come on,
go around.
You'll make it right there. You can go there. You get in front of me, they'll see you.
Where do I put the big kids?
Excuse me?
Where do I put the big kids?
Where are they? Are we moving close enough? Can we get this? You'll need to be here. Come on. There we go. Make sure they can see you. That's right. You see the camera sees you.
That's right. Okay, don't move. We got it. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. Great job.
Great job. Next on the list is Millsboro Middle School. Millsboro, they were able to raise 1,974 food items.
Wow.
They are represented by Art Henry and Jacob Austin, Tanya Levinson, and the Student Council officers.
Somebody get in here and hold this, Jacob.
Hold it, President.
How about that, right there? You good?
A couple of you maybe on this side are standing behind this young man here.
But these guys were teachers.
Paul, as you.
Two of them are. They got time now.
Tall always goes to the back. I learned that.
That was school day.
Too far over.
The school day.
We good?
Squeeze together.
There you go.
Make it to us.
All right, we're good.
There's a school can come out later on.
Good, that's good. Then we got time.
And the top right?
Yeah.
Whenever you got a message come up.
Don't respond back to the message. It's okay, here.
Oh, it is. Got it.
We take a point there.
Okay.
Awesome. There we go. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is anyone here from the Milton Elementary School? Milton? They called and said they could not make it, but I do want to reference the fact that they were able to raise 2,000 food items. Milton Elementary School. That's next. Yep. Next on our list is First State Manufacturing Housing Association, Jen Allen, Associate Executive. First State raised $1,000, which we were able to gain 2,750 food items.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks. Matching First State was the law firm of Fuqua Willard Stevenson Schwab. They raised $1,000. Again, able to gain 2,750 food items.
Appreciate
it. Thank you very much. Thank you.
And again, our champion for several years running, Aloft Aero Architects, raised $1,363 and 5,167 food items were collected, bringing a grand total of 8,917 total food items collected.
Very good.
Bob Schinhold, representing Aloft Senior Safety and Environmental Compliance Manager. I think Bob also coordinates the food drive annually.
Yes, sir. Good. Good.
Thank you very much. Thank all of you.
Mr. President, that concludes our recognition this year. Sussex County, through all of these efforts, were able to collect 31,473 food items to be given out to the community and raise $5,013.50, again, to be used for the collection of food items.
Wow.
Another great campaign, Mr. President.
We live in a good place. Let's move to our public hearing, Community Development Block Grant Program. Mr. Rutt.
Good morning, Mr. President. Give him a moment to clear out. Okay. When council holds public hearings, these are legislative hearings. And today we are going to be having two public hearings on county matters. So representatives of the county will review and explain the pending matters. If you After the county representatives have spoken and given their position, council will provide an opportunity for the public to speak. And if you intend to speak, you're required to come to the front and stand at the speaker's stand, state your name, home address, and before you make your statement. Please sign the sheet at the speaker's stand, and if you represent or speak for a group or organizations, please identify who you represent. When you make your statement, please be concise and do not repeat yourself. If you have a written statement, hand it to me and it will be made a part of the record. If there is more than one person who speaks on behalf of the matter from the county, please do not repeat points, or if you're in opposition or want to speak from the public, do not repeat points that the prior speaker has stated. All persons in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion. There should be no applause or disruptive behavior. And if you have a cell phone, pager, or beeper, or other telephonic device, please take the time now to turn it off or switch it to silent service. Thank you. Okay, now this is the time for the public hearing on the Community Development Block Grant Program.
So thank you. Good morning, Council, and I'd like to thank you for allowing us to hold a public hearing this morning. My name's Brad Whaley, and I have Brandy Nolman, our Housing Coordinator and Fair Housing Compliance Officer, with me this morning. For over 30 years, Sussex County Council and the Community Development Department have used Community Development Block Grant Funding, or CDBG funding, to assist residents in Sussex County. These are funds that are allocated by Congress to HUD, and then they are distributed down to state, local municipalities, counties, cities, and that sort of thing. These funds are specifically designed for housing-related issues to help low to moderate income residents with housing issues. In our case, Kent and Sussex counties are not what you would call an entitlement, so we can't ask HUD directly for funding. So in our case, the Delaware State Housing Authority applies for this funding, and then Kent and Sussex apply to the Delaware State Housing Authority on a competitive basis. So this year, there should be about $2.2 million in CDBG funding, and probably about $800,000 in home investment partnership funding. The main reason we hold a public hearing, like I said, we're in the process of putting our application together. The main reason we hold a public hearing is so local leaders and the public can have comment on this application as we're developing it. This is a copy of last year's application, so just to give you an idea of what it looks like. If we could go to the next, I'll give you a little history of the program. Over the past 5 years, the county and county council has received a little bit over $7.7 million in funding, and we've been able to assist 734 households and almost 1,600 county residents. These projects include housing rehabilitation, demolition, and sewer and water hookups. This is going to go back over the past 10 years in funding, and this is the municipalities that have applied for funding, and you'll be able to see the funding levels they've received over the past years. So for example, Blades has received $256,000. I won't read them off, but they're in your package so you can see what areas have applied and what funding they've received. If you go to the next page, on the right-hand side are the rural communities that we've targeted over the years. So you can see the same thing. Cool Springs over the last 10 years has received a little bit over $250,000, and it goes right down the list. So rural Selbyville, for example, has received $214,000. We've used all that money for housing rehabilitation. Now on the left-hand side is what we call scattered site or county-wide funding. And this is funding that we use to assist anybody who's outside of a municipality or outside of one of those targeted communities. So if you just live out in the country, that would be the funding we would use to help you. And it'll show the funding levels of the various activities. We've got rehab, hookup, demolition, emergency repairs. We did an impacted community study, fair housing activities, and handicap accessibilities. The handicap accessibilities is kind of new. This is our first year of using it. Often we get a call from a resident of the county and they've had a medical issue come up and they need a handicap ramp. So we've used that handicap accessibility for that, to do some changes in bathrooms and that sort of thing. This is the last year. 2017 is the year we just completed and closed out. So I'd like to just give you a quick update on that. We received a little bit over $1.5 million in CDBG at home funding. We assisted 127 low to moderate income households. Of those households, 80% of the income were below 50% AMI, and 54% were below 30%. 61% of the households were elderly. 62% of the households had disabled residents. 66% of the households were female head of households. 72% of the households were minorities. And then the bottom line, we do a lot of tracking with this. There's a lot of requirements for tracking where the funding's going. So more than 70% of that funding was completed by companies that qualify under Section 3, which measures the income of their workers, or women-based enterprises, minority-based enterprises, or veterans-based enterprises. So see, there's another side to this. Not only did we assist the 127 households, but that $1.5 million was paid to contractors, workers, and local suppliers. So it does help both sides. This is the current year that we're working on now, and you'll be able to see the municipalities and rural areas that did receive funding. You also see what that funding's for, mostly rehabilitation, the funding amounts, and then the percentage of completion that we're at right now. So we have some of it at 90%, some of it 70, 27. And the next page is the scattered site. It's showing you how much money we received in that and at what level of completion we are for each one of those projects. I just want to show you some pictures of some of the houses that we've worked on. Mike Jones, our rehab specialist, he goes out in the field, and Guillermo Montavo, they're both rehabilitation specialists. So this is a house in Del Mar. It was a gentleman in his 80s, and the house had just fallen out of repair. As you can see, the roof actually caused some damage inside the house, so the contractors had to go fix that. So I'll show you what it looks like when we've done that. That's what it, when we were done, that's kind of the final project. This is a house in West Rehoboth, an elderly lady we were able to help. And you can see many of these older houses sit very low to the ground. I think that's why the picture of the air conditioner is in there. So it's very hard to put a modern heating and air conditioning system in. So if we go to the next page, you actually see that on the right-hand side, we've used a ductless, one of the newer ductless type systems to get her a central HVAC system. The next picture is a couple in Concord area. Actually, they had some handicap issues. The gentleman has in need of a ramp. So if you see the next picture, you see the house after the rehab and a new ramp in place. And the final one is a house. It's a grandmother in the Roxana area who's raising three of her grandchildren. One of her biggest issues was just weatherization. It was hard to keep this house warm. So you can see we put new siding, we put insulation board underneath it, new windows in. So now it's very energy efficient, and it's a really big help to her. So if we could go to the next slide. In order to qualify for our assistance, the residents have to be at 80% of area medium income. So you'll be able to see the different classifications. Moderate income is 80%, so one person would have to have an income of under $38,500. And then it goes up about $5,000 per additional person. So a family of four would have to have an income of under $54,950. The top number is for a small USDA program we get, the HPG program, and it actually requires that the residents are 50%. So you can see the lines for the 50%. So if you want to know what the area medium incomes in Sussex County, you can just double those numbers. So a one-person household has an area medium income of $48,000, and it just goes up right on down the line. Can we go back? In order for us to help you, the property has to be homeowner occupied, the home has to be insured and insurable, taxes must be current, and then we do place a lien on the property to secure this funding, and it goes by the age of the homeowner. If you're 62 or over, it's a 5-year lien. If you're 62 or under, it's a 10-year lien, and this is a prorated non-interest-bearing lien. So you can sell the house in the future, but if it's within that time period, you'd have to repay a prorated portion of that funding, which we would just use over again. Several years ago, HUD asked us to
prioritize how we're using the funding in the rural communities. And I'll just go over this, but what we did was come up with a system that ensures that the various rural communities that we assist receive the funding allocation equal to their size. So if we go to the next page, you'll see that, for example, when we did this, we knocked on 964 houses. We interviewed them. We collected data on them, so we know the sizes of the communities. And what we did was come up with a system so they, over a three-year period, they receive a percentage of funding that's equal to the size of their community. So, for example, Coverdale Crossroads represents 18% of the residents in all those communities, so we want to make sure that 18% of that funding goes to Coverdale Crossroads. So you can see the first year we applied for the communities in the left-hand column. The second year, which is what we own now, that's the what we're going to apply for this year, and the third year will be what we'll apply for in the future. This is, we've been to all these towns. Today is our 12th public hearing of the year, so we've been to all these towns. We've held public hearings, we've gone over the requests, and we've been working with these towns for many years. So this is what we're putting in this year's application. You'll see Blades is requesting $80,000 for rehab, and it just goes right on down the list. And the difference in those numbers are really the size of the waiting list that we have. For example, Laurel and Seaford have a much bigger waiting list than a smaller town like Frankfort or Ellendale. So that's why there's a difference in there. This year, the town of Millsboro is actually asking for a sidewalk project, an infrastructure project. So we're going to do an application for that. The next page will show what we're asking for in the county application. So we're going to do an application for each town, and then we'll do a county application, which will take in all of these projects. So we're asking for scattered rehab, demolition, emergency rehab, hookups. Scattered roofing is a new topic. We've got a lot of roofs. We know of over 200 on our waiting list that they have actively leaking roofs, so we're trying to help them. And back in those towns and these rural communities, we maintain waiting lists. So we have lists of every town, lists of residents. So when we get funding for Coverdale Crossroads, we literally just start at the top of the list and go right down and help who we can on those lists. Let's go to the next one. Well, no, let me go back to that one. This is the application that we're putting in. And then, like you said, if there's any requests from the general public, we would certainly consider that. But our total CDBG grant request this year is $2,037,913. So what's going to happen is DSHA is going to review these. They're going to score these different projects. And they won't fund all of them, but hopefully they'll fund more than 50% of these projects. So, and before I close, for over the last, 12, 14 years, the county council has additional funding to help with emergency rehab, and we use this for houses that have no running water, houses with no heat, houses that have handicap accessibility issues, extremely bad leaky roofs, electrical issues, and severe plumbing issues. This time of year, we get things like frozen pipes and that sort of thing. We try to prioritize this to go to individuals with disability, individuals over 65 years of age, and households with below 30% AMI, and then veterans. I think Mr. Wilson had requested veterans to be one of the priorities. So if we could go to the next page, that's really what I have. We have a resolution, but I would like to say that over the years, I've worked with a lot of town managers and a lot of code officers, and you may not get to hear this, but I'm told very often how valuable this program is. The towns and cities are very appreciative for the council to do this. It's kind of a service that we provide both for the towns and then just the residents in general in Sussex County. So is there any questions? Or?
Well, certainly we want to thank you and your staff. People don't realize that putting that book together is a lot of work, and the fact that you go to these towns individually, so that's 11 nights you go out to the towns and present this stuff, a lot of time on your part. And I think at the end of the day, it's we all wish we could do more. I think the county, certainly a few years back, we stepped up the money to help with emergency things, and I hope we'll do that again next year in the budget, maybe even more if we can. But there's certainly needs out there, And I realize we can't address all the needs, but we certainly can make an attempt at it and to hopefully whittle that list down from year to year and do whatever. Any question to council? Burton?
You talk about the list, and we had this discussion last year. How many is on that list?
Well, each town has a list. Typically, towns have 10 to 20 names on it. Rural communities are very similar, but our countywide scattered houses are just out in the country. We have 1,034 names on that list waiting for help.
And we get an application probably 1 to 2 every day in the mail to be added. So we just can't catch up.
Now, we don't know for sure if we can assist all this because we don't do the income. We don't do the verification at that time. We don't check the taxes because that'll be in the future. But it's a huge waiting list for this help.
Is it, are most of the people that are on that list, are they, have they tried to like fix the roof and it's just beyond them?
Yeah. Typically, they've done what they can do. Family members have done what they can do. But some of it just goes beyond, right, you know, what a homeowner can do. And if you saw, like, typically one of our largest clients is an elderly female head of household. And she's living on $1,000 a month, and she just doesn't have the funding to, you know, pay the bills, pay for heat, and do the projects that we're helping with.
So one last question. You mentioned that you do this and then you attach a lien to the deal. Is it oftentimes where those are rehabbed and then flipped?
No, they're rarely flipped. Sometimes something will happen, you know, for some reason the resident passes away or, you know, moves in with a family member, and then that funding just comes right back to us again, whatever's left on that lien, and it's what we consider program income, and it's used right back over in the community that it came from. So if it happened to be Laurel or Seaford, we'd use that money right back in those communities. Typically, we maybe 5 a year would be normal, and it really just depends. There's no way of...
but it's usually circumstantial, not...
It is, yeah. Taking normally something's happened. We work with a lot of elderly residents. Maybe they've had to go into a nursing home, or they've had to move in with children, or they've sold the house or something, and that funding will come back in to be recycled.
And one last question, I'm sorry.
Sure.
What the sidewalk, everything looked normal except that sidewalk.
It is. It's an allowable... project under CDBG funding. The thing is that the area that it serves, when you do infrastructure, the area that it serves has to have over 51% of those residents have to be in our income guidelines. And this particular spot in Millsboro, it does. As a matter of fact, almost 100% of the residents fall within our guidelines.
Well, why would you do a sidewalk if you got all this list of other...
Well, it's just an allowable... It's one of the things that's an allowable request. I don't know if DSHA will fund that. Typically, we do an infrastructure maybe once every 3 or 4 years, but it's an allowable thing. We did one in Bridgeville several years ago on Margaret Street, and it runs right kind of out to the middle school. Now, I can't say for sure that they'll fund this, but it's definitely something we can request, so that's what we're doing.
Thank and you. They have to match. Local government's got to match that.
They got to match the funding on the infrastructure.
The town of Millsboro have put up $10,000 to match that.
$10,000, yep. And we'll have to spend that matching funds first. I think the town of Georgetown actually did like a 20% match just to make theirs more attractive. So we'll see how that works out. We'll see if they agree to fund it.
Thank you. More questions to council?
Yeah.
Mr. Riley.
I noticed that Selbyville had a request, I think $80,000 for 2018, mm-hmm. and it hadn't been spent.
We've got an issue in Selbyville with a house that it's kind of got a structural problem in the subfloor. So we may have to do something unusual and request a substantial rehabilitation, and that means we have a $25,000 limit that we can spend on a house. We have a house in Selbyville that could go over that. We may have to go beyond the roof and that sort of thing and take the floor up and rebuild the subfloor system. And we're just a little bit leery of that. We've had an engineer out there. We've had a contractor out there to take up sections of the floor so we can see it. We just haven't done anything other in that town because we may have to go over
that, and it kind of triggers some things. The town's going to have to write a letter requesting us to use it. So if that one house requires more to keep it stable, that's kind of why we haven't done anything in the town of Selbyville yet.
So that funding will remain?
It'll stay, yeah. It'll stay, and we'll use it all in Selbyville, but it may, a portion of it, you know, may go to that one house to keep it stable because it's really in bad shape.
More questions to council? Okay, I guess the public or whatever.
Yes, is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this issue before the council? Seeing none, Mr. President, public hearing can be closed.
We'll close public hearing. It's okay with council. Close the public record. And I guess somebody's got a resolution.
That's me.
Brandy.
Okay. So I have two resolutions for you to consider. The first one is fair housing. Whereas the Sussex County Council recognizes the importance of fair housing for the citizens of Sussex County, and whereas the Sussex County Council supports the goals of the state and federal fair housing laws, now therefore be it resolved that the Sussex County Council heartily encourages all parties involved in the renting, selling, or financing of housing in Sussex County to ensure that no person shall, on the grounds of race, color, national origin, religion, handicap, disability, creed, sex, marital status, familial status, age, sexual orientation, or gender identity, be discriminated against or denied a fair and equal opportunity for housing. And be it further resolved that the Sussex County Council, when acting as administrator of a community block grant, is hereby authorized to take such actions as deemed necessary to affirmatively further fair housing in connection with applying for the community development block grant funding.
Pleasure, council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Burton.
Second.
Second, Mr. Hudson. Any questions? We'll take the vote. Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
I have a motion carried. Your next one, please.
Okay. Last one. This is the authorization to submit the application. Be it known, the Sussex County Council resolves to apply for community development funds from the Delaware State Housing Authority in accordance with appropriate regulations governing community development block grants for the State of Delaware Community Development Block Grant Program. And whereas the County Administrator Todd F. Lawson is hereby authorized to certify that matching funds in excess of $172,000 will be made available upon the approval by the Delaware State Housing Authority. And be it further resolved by the Sussex County Council that Todd F. Lawson, County Administrator, is hereby authorized to submit the fiscal year 2019 Community Development Block Grant applications with all understandings and certifications contained therein to the Delaware State Housing Authority.
Pleasure, council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Burton.
I'll second.
Second, Mr. Riley. Any questions?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Does this, when you approve this house, these houses, do they have to pay more taxes?
No. It's basically just a home repair. It doesn't trigger a reassessment. We're just bringing it back up to the shape it was in 20, 30 years ago.
So if they're reassessed at the time it's built, huh?
I think the assessment goes back to when it was new or when it was built or grandfathered in.
Any more questions?
Quick question.
And Mr. Riley.
Is this money only for rehabs, or could it be used for, I don't know, I hear a lot of talk about tiny house projects, things like that.
No, the Delaware State Housing Authority, HUD funding in general may be able to, but in our case, Delaware Housing State Housing Authority, they issued the guidelines of what we can use it for. And we can use it for housing rehabilitation, demolition, sewer and water hookups, infrastructure projects, and I think code enforcement are the five things that we can use it for. That's historically what we've done.
No new construction.
More questions, council?
Evidently, most of this money is going to veterans, right? I said most of this money is going to veterans.
A portion of it is. We don't know typically when we talk to them, but yeah, a lot of the older gentlemen, many of them are veterans.
They're the ones put if 4 or 5 years of their life, they should at least have. We should at least sponsor them.
Sure. Well, especially with the county council funding, we do try to target veterans. We know several veteran agencies, and they'll call us and say, "Hey, I need some help." So we help them whenever we can.
Thank you. Any more questions, to council? Take the vote, Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
Mr. Burton.
Yes.
I will. Yes. Motion carried.
Thank you
both and your staff very much. Well, let's go to our 10:30 public hearing.
We also then have a public hearing. You heard the rules from the prior public hearing, and they apply to this. This is a public hearing on an ordinance to amend Chapter 99.
Somebody's coming down.
Mr. Medlars.
Medlars.
Right, sir. Good morning, Mr. President. Good morning, Council. This one here, we were here approximately 2 years ago. And when Chapter 99, which is a shared chapter between the Planning Department and the Engineering Department, revised the road and drainage conditions. And it was a shared effort. It was a big working group. It was a multi-year effort. And since then, since we've been working on this for 2 years, or a year and a half plus, since we introduced this amendment, these are the corrections we found were technically errors and or needed to have additional clarifications. So we communicated the desired changes to our assistant county attorney, and Mr. Robertson drafted up the ordinance before you. It's been reviewed by the Planning Commission. They had a number of questions, but that was approved unanimously, and that was after your departure. So, having said this, I'm on a 5-minute limit, so I'm going to try to honor this and make this really quick.
We didn't have time clock on.
The effort was to not have a set right-of-way width, and despite Mr. Robertson's my best efforts, we missed one, so the first one eliminates the last 50-foot reference. The next one is...
Mr. President, can I clarify? You're saying it's eliminating that 50-foot reference?
Yes, we have the elimination of the 50-foot reference. The right-of-way width is dictated by how you design your roadway.
Okay. I just want to be clear.
Yes. And that's when you look at the ordinance, it's a strikeout. And the, or it's actually bracketed is the legal term. And it leads to confusion sometimes because people read it and they think it's new. But it's you have to look for the outside brackets. We also had to define what is the face-to-face of rolled curb, so we introduced that. We had to correct an error for the longitudinal slope between closed drainage and open drainage. It was reversed, so we put it in the right percentages. We had to introduce a vertical curve for slopes greater than 1%, and we had to add a definition of how long a cul-de-sac or turnaround road can be without such a feature, not just for sheer distance, but also for a number of units served, residential units served. And that number is 4. So if you exceed that, if you have, for example, 3 duplexes, you would have to provide a turnaround. And the other clarification would be, and that's really more, Mr. Robertson has helped me with that. Before, it was not clear when you use right-of-way versus access easement. In the new definition, let me read that to you. Right-of-way shall be used in major subdivisions. Access easements shall be used in developments under single ownership. So now that's very clear. Before, we had sort of a, even in the projects coming through over the last 18 months, we had sort of a hodgepodge. So this will set it. This is it. If you have a major subdivision, you have to have right-of-ways. If you have single ownership, you have to have access easements. The other one was the sidewalks. We deleted a couple of the sidewalk references because sidewalks are optional. They're optional, always has been optional. So we now just defined where the right-of-way line would fall if you have or don't have sidewalks. So let me read that to you real quick. Place 1 foot behind the back of curb if you have no sidewalk. Place 1 foot behind the back of sidewalk, if you do have sidewalk, it can be one side or the other, or both. Place 1 foot behind the 10-year stormwater surface of roadside swales, if you have no curb or sidewalk. So here are your three options. These three options cover all of our subdivisions we regulate. So now we know if you have a major subdivision, you're creating lots, these are your right-of-way lines you have to meet. So it was actually well received by the regulated community because we've circulated this, so we've actually received some new subdivisions based on these provisions. So last not least was, I think, let's just call it an error on Hans's part, the county engineer I think must have done some cut and paste, and I used the same closeout procedure for sidewalks as we used for curb. That doesn't work, so we had to introduce the closeout procedures for sidewalks. So what you see here is the corrections. So that is how you close out a sidewalk project and you fix the deficiencies. Did I meet my timeline, Mr. President?
You're good.
Good.
You're good.
Counselor, do we need anything?
No, I don't think so. I'll just add, this may be the first ordinance we've seen as an amendment for the new commissioner or council members. And just for the benefit, Mr. Mendler has touched upon this. Whenever we amend something in the code, frankly, it is confusing, but by state law, we have to put the deletions in brackets, and then we have to show anything we add by underlines in italics, and that's why you'll see that throughout this document. Sometimes it's hard to pick up. I think in the version that went out of the packet, we actually also took the step of highlighting the changes so you could go right to them. But I just wanted to explain that since that's maybe one of the first ones.
Any questions of council? Questions of council? Okay, thank you.
Is there anyone in the public who wishes to speak to this ordinance amendment? Hearing none, public hearing can be closed.
We'll close the public hearing and close public records. Okay with council. Ask Mr. Rutt to read the short title.
An ordinance to amend Chapter 99, Articles 1, 3, and 6, Sections 99-5, 99-18, and 99-31 of the Code of Sussex County regarding streets, street design standards, and inspections and closeout procedures.
Pleasure, Council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Burton.
Second.
Second, Mr. Wilson. Questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
Mr. Burton.
Yes.
I've got the motion carried. Thank you all very much. Let's move back, Mr. Lawson, to finish out your report.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. A couple items to get to today. First are the appointments under consideration for County Council, I believe. First one being the appointment to the Board of Adjustment and Appeals. There's information in your packet regarding this appointment consideration. I want to be clear, this is the Building Code Board of Adjustments and Appeals. It is confusing. We obviously have a Board of Adjustment. That is the board that meets Monday nights and hears cases. This is the Board of Adjustments and Appeals. This body hears appeals related to decisions made by our building code chief. Today's consideration to this position would be for, make sure I'm correct here, Mr. Hudson's appointment due to a vacancy on that board, and I believe Mr. Hudson would like to, it's my understanding, appoint Mr. Scott Edmonston to this body. This is a term that would last, it's a five-member body that has terms for 4 years. I have a motion for your consideration.
Okay, you want the motion read?
Yes, please.
Read the motion, please.
Be it moved, the Sussex County Council appoints Mr. Scott Edmonston to the Sussex County Building Code Board of Adjustments and Appeals effective immediately and until such time as the term expires on December 2020.
Pleasure, Council.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Hudson.
Second.
Second, Mr. Wilson. Any questions on the motion?
Will we be doing an interview like we did last?
No, we do not for these. The interview is only for Board of Adjustment and Planning and Zoning Commission. Yeah. Any more questions? We'll take the vote, Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
Mr. Burton.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, motion carried. Next, sir.
Thank you. The next appointment for consideration is a reappointment, and this is to the Board of Assessment Review. This board meets in March of each year to hear appeals on assessed properties. This board consists of five members who serve terms of 5 years. This reappointment is Mr. Wilson's reappointment, and is my understanding he would like to reappoint Mr. Lester Beachy to this board.
Yes.
Have a motion?
I do have a motion. Be it moved, the Sussex County Council appoints Mr. Lester Beachy to the Sussex County Board of Assessment Review, effective immediately for a term of 5 years or until February 2024.
Pleasure, Council.
Make a motion.
Motion, Mr. Wilson.
Second.
Second, Mr. Hudson. Any questions? We'll take the vote. Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Next, sir.
Thank you. Next item is a wetlands and buffer working group discussion. I am passing down a copy of an outline related to this discussion. And we have a PowerPoint as well.